Ladies, gentlemen, millennials, welcome back to our holiday episode of the Nerd Bomber Podcast. I am your friend Claude, here again with
just Jamie.
And what we have for you today is part two on this, the last day of the 12 days of Christmas. And so, to round it out, we've got, as previously mentioned, a stocking full of smaller gifts. And let's dive right in and start it off. Jamie, what are we unwrapping first?
So I was thinking about things that I like for Christmas that maybe don't fit into the usual Christmas gift box, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
You know, and on this show in the past, we've talked about commercials. We've talked about special TV specials. We've talked about TV Christmas-specific episodes. We've talked about movies. We talked about movies more today, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought, like, okay, what's slightly outside of the boundaries of that? So the first thing that I thought of for me in particular is one of my favorite things to do around Christmas time is to repeatedly listen to an album called We Wish You a Metal Christmas and a Happy New Year. This was produced by Armory, the record label, in 2008, and features a quite a cast of sort of heavy metal personalities. There's really no band in this. It's different singers, guitarists, drummers, etc., being matched up to perform different songs from the Christmas sort of Christmas standards done through, you know, their own versions.
Is this the
and it's something that I've always gotten a kick out of.
Is this the red album cover with the white writing?
Yes, that is correct.
I know exactly the one.
One, there's two versions. There's two variant covers. One has kind of like a deer skull.
Yeah.
And the other one, like a fake sort of diamond plate, you know, metal diamond plate pattern on it.
Naturally.
So highlights for, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff on here, in my opinion. The highlights for me would be at least a couple of them. A rendition of Run Rudolph Run sung by Lemmy Kilmister of Motorhead. It sounds ridiculous with Lemmy Kilmister's vocals, but it's a really good rockin' version of that song. And that features Billy Gibbons on guitar and Dave Grohl on drums. And then the other that I always see as a highlight, just because I really like Ronnie James Dio. He's one of my favorite singers, musicians of all time. He sings a rendition of God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen.
That's
with
right.
He's accompanied by Tony Iommi on guitar, along with Rudy Sarzo and Simon Wright. And that's a really fun version of that song. And there's a bunch of good stuff on here. I could go down the whole track list thing. I won't necessarily do that now. But some of them are really good. Some of them are ridiculous, such as Silent Night, sung by Chuck Billy, which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. But it's just chock full of interesting little novelties. So I always get a kick out of it. And every winter I have the CD. That's right. It's a CD, physical media, in my car.
Wow. Well, I mean, it stands to reason since the songs themselves are classics and the artists singing them are classics, that your listening format would also be a classic.
I suppose so.
Yeah, along those lines, I don't know if I ever had the full album. I've definitely had songs from it over the years. But my equivalent for that would be the Twisted Sister Christmas album that came out sort of around that time too. I think
right.
That
yes,
was 2009,
absolutely.
I think. And that is, I mean, it was more successful than it had any right to be. I think that it even surprised them. I think it helped convince them to start touring again for a while. But, you know, I think for sheer variety, your pick wins because it's kind of the Twisted Sister one is a fun novelty at first, and it almost sounds like the same song 10 times.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. I've never had that album. I do have a second sort of Christmas metal album called Monster Ballads Xmas.
Nice.
And there is Twisted Sister does appear on that, doing a version of I'll Be Home for Christmas.
Yeah.
Along with Lita Ford.
Yeah, there's a video for that. Also,
yeah. So that's also very good. Actually, you know, I wasn't going to talk about that album, the Monster Ballads one, but it's also very, very good. And it has, to me, a couple of really good things on it. It has probably, to me, the best version of a rock and roll Winter Wonderland, and that's by Stryper. And I know you're a big Stryper fan.
Absolutely.
So that's something that I always get a kick out of that on that album.
Yeah, that's they included that on, I believe, their second studio album. So, like,
nice.
Right out of the gate, they were going for that. And it's weird. It wasn't even, like, part of a special release back then. It was just part of the album.
Yeah.
And that Winter Wonderland isn't even, I mean, they're, you know, a Christian metal band, and it's not even a specifically, you know, Christian-centered Christmas song. So it was a double head-scratcher, but their version is fantastic. I still love it to this day.
It really is good. And also, strangely, on that album, you know, I said earlier that the first album, We Wish You a Metal Christmas, has a strange version of Silent Night sung by Chuck Billy. And if anybody listening doesn't know who Chuck Billy is, just look up Chuck Billy and listen to the kind of vocals he does and then apply that to Silent Night, and it's truly absurd. Strangely, the Monster Ballads Xmas album also has Silent Night and also has a very odd version. And this one's done by Faster Pussycat. And it's a very almost kind of like droning industrial song. If you didn't know any better, you'd almost think it was Marilyn Manson, just from the style of it. So it's just very interesting that for some reason that song, Silent Night, attracted maybe the most outside-the-box thinking in terms of how these musicians put together a version of it.
Yeah, funny how that worked out. Yeah, it's weird how Faster Pussycat went through a period of, you know, trying to distance themselves from the quote-unquote 80s metal, hair metal label. And they did go very heavily, I don't want to say rip-off, but Marilyn Manson-esque is the right way to say it.
Well, Alice Cooper is also very guilty of that in the early 2000s.
Very true.
He does a version on the first album called Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Claus is very specifically spelled out as C-L-A-W-S, by the way.
Right.
And he does a version of that song. Now, it's very sort of Alice Cooper style. It's just kind of a straightforward hard rock song. And he does that with John 5, Billy Sheehan, and Vinny Appice.
Well, in the spirit of Christmas, thank the baby Jesus for that. would you be so kind as to tell us about an alternative Christmas movie, perhaps after we unwrap it?
So the other thing I was going to mention, just because one of the most cliched and to me personally annoying current trends of the pop culture zeitgeist is to make these declarations about how your favorite the royal you, people like to be so proud of the fact that their favorite Christmas movie is Die Hard.
Yeah.
Now, Die Hard is a fine movie. I like it quite a bit. But I just don't see it as a Christmas movie. I see it as an action movie that takes place around the holidays. There's no element of the story, I don't really think, that is very specific to Christmas, in my opinion.
Right.
The one I always point to, my favorite sort of alternative Christmas movie, is Batman Returns.
Well, come what may. Merry Christmas, Mr. Wayne.
Merry Christmas, Albert.
Goodwill toward men. And women.
So this obviously came out, Warner Brothers was the production company, came out in 1992. Because in this movie, there's actually mentions of the holiday. There's a tree lighting ceremony. There's people Christmas shopping. There's a scene under the mistletoe. There's a holiday ball. Like, to me, it's very much so. Well, what I should say is more so than Die Hard, the Christmas holiday season is more directly ingrained into the milieu of the movie.
100%. The whole thing is in the snow. I don't think there's a flake of snow in Die Hard.
Right. Merry Christmas is the last line of the movie, I think.
Right. Yeah, it's weird how it took a long time for people to really, you know, get behind this, I guess, the meme element of the whole Die Hard's a Christmas movie thing. It took a while in you know, the continuity from when that came out to now. But I mean, I think the Batman Returns push has only recently really started to catch on within the last year or two. And it is so much more, like you said, it's like so much more blatantly qualifying. And it's just interesting how that the tone of it, of the presentation of it, I guess overrides and makes you forget about the fact that it's blatantly a Christmas movie that came out in June.
Yeah, that's another odd factor to the reality of that. That they would go really, the filmmakers would go so out of their way to throw Christmas in your face in this movie. Like we both said, it's very obvious. It's not a background element. It's front and center.
Right.
But the movie came out in June. It's a funny, interesting choice that actually fits right into Tim Burton's canon, I guess.
You will get nothing but agreeance from me on this topic. I think I've only watched it once, though. Around actual Christmas time, but it works.
Well, good. Continue that.
It's a new tradition.
It's a new movement, and I'll be the flag bearer if I have to. All right, reach into that stocking, get out another present. Let's see what we got.
Great idea. Let's see what we've got here. Oh, it looks like a Christmas commercial.
So the first one I have is Campbell's Soup Melting Snowman.
A classic. I defy anybody
1993.
To disagree. It's the one where the snowman turns into a kid, right? When he gets thawed by the
right,
soup?
Right, yep. Yep, comes in, eats the soup, thaws down, yep. As long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Nothing melts away the cold like a delicious hot bowl of Campbell's soup.
Let it snow, let it snow.
Well, you know what? It's kind of interesting that we bring this up on the episode where we talk about Christmas-related special effects, because that one has always kind of stuck with me, the effect of the transition to show that in his commercial. It's a very, not quite stop motion-y, but there's something weird about the way it's accomplished, something almost jerky in the motion of it.
Right. It's very sort of, actually, I mean, now I realize it, but even as a kid, I remember thinking like, man, what a mess.
Like after he melts.
Yeah, right. That's a lot of snow to just melt on your kitchen floor.
Did Jimmy spill his soup, or did he just melt into a human boy?
The water damage, come on.
Once you came in from the cold and successfully transitioned, naturally you needed an activity to occupy your time now that you are done going outside for the day. And I think it's safe to say that a lot of those times you would curl up with a book or a magazine or maybe even a big old catalog. And it may not fit in the stocking, but why don't you unwrap one and tell us about it anyway?
So two of them come to mind. Now the first one that comes to mind, actually, the JCPenney Big Book, was published from 1963 to 2009, some version of it. That's the one that comes to mind, but actually the one that was longer lived was the Sears Wish Book.
Right.
Which was published from 1933 to 2011. And both of these have had sort of like restarts in the 2010s, much smaller, shorter catalogs, and mostly they're just online now.
Ever wonder what Santa would do without his elves? The Sears Wish Book. Just make a list. Check it twice, then call 1-800-366-3000. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Every order is backed by Sears, and Sears delivers anywhere. Of course, the elves would never leave Santa holding the bag. But it's nice to know he has a backup plan.
You know, a big part of Christmas memories, for better or for worse, in our capitalist society, is the advertising that goes with it. You know, Santa Claus drinking a Coke. In things like these print catalogs, at least in the 90s, which was, hey, look at all the ways your parents could spend money on you as long as they love you enough. To go through and circle these things, I mean, that's what we would do. We'd flip through, circle the things we want. And it was just this fantasy land almost, this fantasy land with no background. I mean, I guess sometimes there'd be like a background. Most of the time it was just kids and a field of white playing with these amazing, whatever it happened to be at the time. We've talked about Christmas toys on past episodes. You know, the Technodrome always sticks out in my mind. But it was always just this fantasy world of anything and everything is possible.
Right. Yeah, to your point, in the heyday of these catalogs was certainly pre-internet for the vast majority of people. And you mentioned things like the Technodrome, which is a fairly expensive, large-scale playset for the Ninja Turtles. And catalogs like this were often the only way that I knew some of that stuff even existed, or that's the only way I ever saw it back then.
Exactly.
Like you're flipping through, and that's part of the appeal of these catalogs. It's like you see all the things you know about, but then you get your mind blown because you see things that weren't available in your area, or, you know, like I said, things that are on a bigger scale than maybe you would have seen in real life. And just hours of of dreaming and wishing, and then exactly what the book suggests. And I think even though it is just a glorified ad, it also, it's just a way to jumpstart and stimulate your brain activity and, like, you know, your imagination.
Exactly right. And that was a huge part of my Christmas nostalgia, is those books. And I mean, I think my parents invited it. You know what I mean? Like, we could never get everything that I would want, of course, but I think they used it as sort of a jumping off point. Sure, I might circle the Technodrome, and I wasn't going to get it, but maybe I get the cool man.
Yeah.
You know, it's on that same page. It's related. So they could use that as a sort of a goalpost and just try to get as close as they could in some cases. Although I did learn, or I think they learned, and what I have learned too, is not just to get everything somebody asked for, because then it's a little boring. Get a surprise.
Yeah.
But just in terms of me as a kid, though, just, yeah, like you said, flipping through that and seeing, not only was it a fantasy land of things that you'd probably never have, or at least you wouldn't have all of it, of course, but also a lot of it was new and novel because you didn't see it on the shelves where you were, or you didn't see it in, you know, like the local small little brochures that you'd get. And this was the entire landscape of toys and playthings for you to ogle. So it was just a whole other universe flipped through these books.
Right. And something else that these catalogs specifically did for me is make me, well, I guess diversify my interests, or like what I would consider myself to be interested in, or what I would be able to envision myself doing. A lot of times, you know, if we would go to the store locally, it was just like the same two or three things that I already had interest in, and I would just seek those out and whatever. But like with these catalogs, you could flip through and see, like, oh, wow, look at all these keyboards. Look at all these guitars. You know, look at these stereos.
Yep. Absolutely.
And suddenly I wanted a keyboard and a guitar and a stereo. So it was a double-edged
suddenly
sword.
Suddenly parents were really bargaining for.
Yeah, exactly. There's I think at some point they just, the circling would be ignored, save for a few select pages.
Right, yep.
I mean, so
one of the two most possibly reasonable things that he circled. Right. Oh, the $2,000 keyboard? Probably not.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that it's, you know, again, in the pre-internet age, it played a huge role in, like, broadening your horizons and what you would imagine yourself capable of doing.
Absolutely.
So you see, they're not just ads, man. They're brain stimulators.
They're life. They're memories.
That's right.
They're nostalgia. Yes, and they are intellectual stimulation.
That's right. And right. Speaking of not just ads, what other commercials do you have to talk about?
So the I have two more, actually, to mention. One that I can't believe I didn't talk about last. Well, actually, I can't believe I didn't mention either of these last year, to be honest. One of them, I'll go chronologically, the first one came out in 1989, and it was the Cheerios, the Honey Nut Cheerios Scrooge commercial.
Oh, yeah, instant classic.
Who's there?
The taste of nuts and honey, Mr. Scrooge.
Ah! Come back. Better things to do.
But Mr. Scrooge, Honey Nut Cheerios, it's Christmas.
My customary gruel will suffice, thank you.
Yeah, but Honey Nut Cheerios blends golden honey and crunchy nuts.
Listen, did you say honey and nuts?
It's a honey
Merry Christmas, Mr. Honey Scrooge.
And of course, the things that pop into my head are just Scrooge's lines from this. My customary gruel will suffice, thank you.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, the bee is selling the idea of Honey Nut Cheerios to him. And I said, did you say honey and nuts? Because if there's one thing that I need on Christmas, it's Honey Nut Cheerios, that's for sure.
That's right.
Of course, I jest, although I will say that a huge tradition in my family is that my mom makes seemingly hundreds of pounds of Chex Mix. And Cheerios is an important ingredient in that.
Ooh, nice.
But anyway, yeah, that commercial was very memorable to me. And it's weird because it's one of these, just a commercial, and it's really just one set, you know. But the production value is really, really good. I mean, if you told me that this was the set they used in a Hollywood Scrooge production, I'd totally buy into that idea.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of times what makes all of, I mean, I hate to admit that commercials in general from a certain era are a big part of what nostalgia is to me. And I think a lot of the ones that made the biggest impact are the ones that are, you know, kind of higher production values or, you know, really they actually had thought put into them.
Right. Well, last year, you know, I recently re-listened to last year's episode, which is why I've referred back to it a couple times, last year's Christmas episode, that is. One thing you said was, when we were discussing the Fruity Pebbles Christmas commercial, is that as a kid, you kind of got fooled into feeling like you were getting a bonus little cartoon short.
Right.
It was advertising, but it was also something that you weren't going to see. You know, it was something new from the Flintstones. In this case, it was something new in movies. It was a convincing actor playing a character in a convincing setting. So it was like a little something, it was a bit of a bonus in terms of what you could watch and see and consume. And because it didn't just play all year nonstop, it seemed a little bit more specialized. So it was like all of this Christmas advertising. It reminds you of the season. It reminds you of what's to come. Christmas, you're so excited. And so it just kind of builds upon itself. And I think in that way, it sort of creates this magnifying glass for nostalgia. It makes it even more intense because in that moment, when you were a kid experiencing it, it was compounded by the season and the holiday and the anticipation and the excitement and all of those things.
Yeah, wow. They really are little microcosms of the entire experience.
So the last one I have here is a McDonald's commercial from 1994 called Runaway.
Hi, Lindsay.
Oh, hi, Mama.
What's new?
Nothing. Everybody says I'm too little.
Really?
I'm thinking of running away to McDonaldland.
McDonaldland? That's where I'm from.
Yeah, I hear it's really nice.
I hear where you're from is really nice, too.
It's okay.
Yeah, because you've got that basketball hoop over your garage and your back porch. It has that great wind chime.
I made that at summer camp.
Plus, there's that beautiful field
where I chase butterflies.
Hey, when you're in McDonaldland, who's going to make the decorations for your dad's birthday party? Who's going to be the snowflake in the school play?
Ronald.
Who's going to feed Mr. Goldfish?
Hey, Ronald, I think I hear my mom calling me.
Oh, okay. Bye, Lindsay.
Bye.
In the commercial, a little girl named Lindsay is running away from home and runs into Ronald McDonald's building a snowman and convinces her of all the ways, all the things that'll happen if she runs away from home. You know, who's going to feed the goldfish? Who's going to...
Oh, yeah.
Right. So who's going to plan for her dad's birthday party? Who's going to feed the goldfish, et cetera? And then she goes, I think I hear my mom calling me. You know, he talks her into it and she goes back home. So it's basically a retelling, kids' version of It's a Wonderful Life. You can run away from home. Here's what the world will be without you. Here's what your home will be without you. And it's a very quintessential Christmas advertising campaign. It's not really even a campaign. It's a single commercial that ran for several years. Obviously, it came out pretty late, 1994. I mean, I was already 12 years old, but it must have been pretty frequently aired because it's definitely like ingrained into my memory.
Yeah, definitely. I would have sworn it was older than that, but that just shows you how often it was played. Wow, that's such a great point. I remember almost every second of that commercial, but I never made the correlation between that and It's a Wonderful Life, and it's right there. And
it kind of goes to show you like how simple, when you break it down, like how simple a basic narrative is,
right,
in the hands of a good commercial filmmaker, commercial maker, whatever you call that.
What's the idea for this year's McDonald's Christmas commercial, guys? Well, we're going to take Ronald and have him tell It's a Wonderful Life in 30 seconds. All right, make it happen.
And they did. Yeah, it's completely successful.
Yep. And it's, again, I have such a love-hate relationship with commercials and certainly with advertising in general. But this era of commercial, you know, it gets a pass because it's from, you know, it's from our childhood and that's sacred. But it also, I mean, it's undeniably from an era of, as we've been saying, much more effort, much more production value, much more thought in many cases. I'm not saying, like, they don't do high-budget commercials anymore, but... the story is condensed, and this is one of those fairly effective, you know, I'm not going to say tearjerker, but it's an emotionally, I guess, effective. It's emotionally resonant for an advertisement.
Yeah. Yeah, and also when you look at it, like if you cut the elements of it that are advertising specific, the commercial still tells its story.
Right.
You know, this commercial was not telling Lindsay to go, hey, on your way back home, stop by McDonald's and get a Happy Meal for $1.99.
Exactly.
It was none of that. It was a McDonald's commercial because it had Ronald McDonald convincing a little girl not to run away. But that wouldn't, if that wasn't Ronald McDonald, the story, the narrative of the commercial would still be the exact same. So in that way, too, again, filmmakers, if that's what you call them when it's a 30-second advertisement, did a good job of staying somewhat creatively, I think, ethical in a way, because yes, this is an advertisement, but the body of the commercial would not change if you took those elements out.
Yeah, exactly. It almost, I mean, I guess in a reverse psychology way, it almost makes you want to go there because it doesn't hit you over the head. You know, it connects with you on a story level, on an emotional level. It doesn't have to cram, you know, the golden arches and, like, you know, the, like you said, the $1.99 hamburger meal or whatever it is. It doesn't have to tell you that. You know what their products are, and now you've connected with the brand in a much more subtle way.
It's creatively ethical, I guess.
Right.
But yeah, that's all I got for holiday commercials that kind of stuck out to me that we didn't mention last year, that I thought were worthy of contemplation. Stocking is empty.
Well, since your stocking is empty, I guess that means that the cookies have been eaten and the wrapping paper is spread across the living room. So we have some work to do. And until next Christmas, I remain your friend Claude.
And I'm just Jamie.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
And a Happy New Year.
The Nerd Bomber Podcast is a Ghost Factory Internet production brought to you by the WHAM Network.